In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Oh, yeah.
Delicious.
Delicious. That's what they say when Alan Adams walks in the studio here for Pass the Popcorn every week. Hello, Mr. Adams.
I am indeed delicious.
Delicious, delightful, delirious, all those things. How was your weekend, young feller?
You know, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. We got out and about. I'm not going to lie.
Nice.
Yeah, no. Friday night, we went to the opening night of A Pirate's Life for She. The current show from the Division of Theater at the UMaine School of Performing Arts. We'll talk about that a little bit. And on Sunday, last night, we went to see Nate Bargatze.
Oh, I heard he was great.
Oh, man, that guy's so good.
Yeah.
He's so good. And I was talking to Sheridan about it afterwards. There's something really wonderful about watching someone at the top of their game, whatever their game is,
yeah,
do that thing. And he's great. Like he's really crushing it right now. And the set was great. He had their whole deal was like they put on a full on show. Like it was like there was a host, there were three different opening comics, and then Bargatze was the headliner. And so you got, I don't know, like the opener, 5-10 minutes, like not long sets, but it was a real nice way to sort of like get into the sort of mood of the situation.
And of all the things you see live, I mean, we love live theater, but when you see a comic, as you mentioned, at the top of their game, being able to be up there by yourself in a room of several thousand people and have them eating out of the palm of your hand, man, that's fun to see.
It's such a visceral shared experience, you know what I mean? And he was phenomenal. And I say this with admiration as someone who who tends to get a little colorful and salty in his language. Not a single curse word was uttered on that stage last night.
Wow.
Not a single one.
Wow. How about that?
You know what I mean? And it's just like, and you know, and I'm certainly not a prude, you know, and I like, you know, and I love it when comics work blue as much as the next guy. But there is something like oddly satisfying to just watch a dude just kill it for an hour.
Yeah.
Like, and just like with nothing stronger than a gosh darn it mixed in there. But yeah, he's hilarious. So that was a great show. But speaking of great shows, A Pirate's Life for She at the School of Performing Arts, can't recommend it highly enough. And I say that not just as an employee of the School of Performing Arts, but yeah, directed by faculty member Dee Granke, written by a woman named Amy Root. It's this wonderful sort of LGBTQ+ romp across the high seas, lots of like really like real groaner puns and some great action sequences and just a heck of a lot of fun. And it's loosely based on the story of like Mary Read and Anne Bonny, and like so that's nice. Sort of the sort of framework, but they really let her rip. And it's interesting because I talked to Dee about it a little bit, and their take on it was, you know, there's so much art, like so much of like LGBTQ+ like inclusive art is built on this foundation of trauma, like that's and which understandably so,
right.
Like that's, you know, that that totally makes sense considering the societal sort of norms that those folks are sort of working against. But like Dee said, you know, sometimes, you know, it's okay for these, for shows with these sorts of themes and this kind of inclusivity to just be fun. And that's what this is. It's a very, it's a fun adventure story that also has real meaning in that sort of inclusivity space. And you know, the kids pull it off. One of the things I was saying that I made a point to mention to Dee after the fact, there's no faking the kind of joy that was coming from that cast while they were performing the show. You know, and I'm like, I'm a big proponent of academic theater anyway, because you have that sort of joyful energy. But every single one of those actors was clearly having the time of their lives.
Great.
You know, and that reads.
Yeah.
Like, you can feel that in the room. And so, we saw it Friday night, some pretty good houses Saturday and Sunday, but it would be great. Like, those kids deserve a full house. Mm. So anyone who's listening and you're looking for something to do this weekend, I can't recommend highly enough A Pirate's Life for She. It's at Hauk Auditorium. Shows 7:30 Friday and Saturday night, and then there's a matinee at 2 on Sunday. And so if you can do it, by all means, you'll have a good time.
That sounds fantastic. Alan Adams here in studio with us. One movie this week?
Yep, just the one. It is a theatrical release. It was weirdly barren on the streaming services for originals this weekend. Like, I looked hard, the only thing I could find was the latest Tyler Perry movie on Netflix, and I was like, you know what, I love Rich, but I don't know that I love him that much.
No, thank you. I understand completely.
So I carved out some time to go see the new one from Ethan Coen. Titled Drive Away Dolls, which, Rich, I was not prepared for what I was getting with this movie. As I said, it's directed by Ethan Coen, who co-wrote the screenplay with his wife, Trisha Cook, who also edited the film. So very much a family affair.
Is this the first film he's directed without Joel?
I think so. No. Like, Joel's done a couple, yeah. But I think this is Ethan's first, because my understanding was Ethan was going to stop doing movies altogether. Well,
that's what I thought, yeah.
And so this was kind of a pleasant surprise because, you know, they're obviously both extremely talented dudes. And so, but it's really funny to sort of hold up something like, Joel did The Tragedy of Macbeth or whatever with Denzel and Frances McDormand. And now you've got this weird, like, I mean, it's a period piece because it's set in 1999, but this weird buddy lesbian road comedy. So they're clearly going in different directions.
Yes.
But I will say this one vibed a little bit more Coen-y, like specifically like early, like screwball Coen-y.
Yeah. Well, when I watched the trailer, it had almost that, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou feel,
you know, like there are a couple of scenes where it's like, oh, there's a whiff of Raising Arizona you know what I mean? Which is great. Cause you know, it's no secret that I ride pretty hard for the Coen brothers.
Love it.
So, but yeah, it's a wonderful cast, Margaret Qualley, Geraldine, Viswanathan, Beanie Feldstein, Coleman Domingo is in this. Some relatively short but very scene steely appearances from Pedro Pascal and Matt Damon, who Pedro Pascal, by the way, was apparently hammered at the Independent Spirit Awards or whatever it was, and gave nice. I haven't watched it yet, but it has gave apparently an acceptance speech for the ages.
Wow.
So look that up on your old internet there, folks. But yeah. So I'm going to try to do a brief synopsis of this movie. It's weird because you wouldn't think an 84-minute movie would be difficult to synopsize, but this one's got a lot going on, even as it doesn't necessarily have a lot going on, if that makes sense. It's the final days of 1999, we see a guy sitting nervously in a bar, clutching a briefcase. Said guy is Pedro Pascal. He runs out and is confronted by a guy who worked at the restaurant. Some mysterious dudes in a SUV roll up and wrest away the briefcase that he's got. That's all we get. We don't know what's in the briefcase. We don't know what's happening. We're in Philadelphia, and so we've got Jamie. That's Margaret Qualley. And her live-in girlfriend Suki, played by Beanie Feldstein, their relationship is falling apart because Jamie is unfaithful. She gets kicked out, and so Jamie hooks up with her friend Marion. That's Geraldine Viswanathan, and they're like we gotta change something. Jamie's a free spirit, a wild child from Texas. Marion is a very uptight, straight-laced young lady, but they're both looking for a change. And so Marion is like, I'm going to move. I'm gonna go spend some time with my aunt in Tallahassee. They're going to go to Tallahassee. She's going to go to Tallahassee. And Jamie's like, well, I'll go to Tallahassee too. And that's where we learn about something called a drive-away. I'd never heard of this thing before, but apparently, so it's apparently a service where you pay a small amount of money and they basically give you a car that needs to be taken to another place. And so you drive the car to the place and drop it off. And that's, so it's cheaper than a bus or flying or whatever. And so they go to this place to do it. And they roll in just after the guy has received a mysterious phone call saying someone's going to take a car to Tallahassee. They show up and they're like, we'd like to go to Tallahassee. Our guy, Curly, is like, well, yeah, okay, here you go. Here's the keys. Take off. Wouldn't you know it, Rich? These were not the people who were supposed to have this car.
Oh, boy.
A car, by the way, that a vintage mid-80s Dodge Aries K car.
fantastic.
Which was my first car.
Oh, really?
So wow. It's like, nice. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, I am like, I am feeling this. Like I am here for it. And so they hop on the road and they're heading down to Tallahassee with something they're not supposed to have.
Mm.
And the folks who want the thing that they're not supposed to have, well, it's not long before they're in hot pursuit. And we follow Jamie and Marion as they work their way through seedy motels and gay bars as they head down to Tallahassee. And that's kind of it. I mean, it's not it at all. Mm. But that's like as far as like the plot per se, like that's about what I can tell you. What else we have is there are two things about this movie that made that I was not expecting at all. First of all, pretty graphic, like in terms of like there's some sex stuff going on in this movie, like, you know, a lot more than you'd expect in an 84-minute movie. We'll put it that way. But second, and the more sort of surprising in a good way, was because we had sort of talked about this idea of it being reminiscent of like older Coen brothers movies. Well, there's a deliberate like 70s-ish, like the early, the closest thing I could think of is like there was a Roger Corman vibe to some of it.
Oh, nice.
Well, but it's like, It's like the movies of the late 60s and early 70s that were all just jam-packed with the weird lava lamp interstitials and like all the bizarre imagery, like that wasn't necessarily connected to anything that was going on. Ton of that.
Wow.
Like between scenes, like just, yeah, you know.
It got
was,
me.
It was, and it was just like so much weird like color. Every once in a while they drop something in there that was a intended to be a plot point, you know, sort of. Again, masked in bizarre imagery and colors and everything very like shadows and everything moving around. It was very, I mean, it's very cool, but again, I didn't know this was coming. And so, you know, it's, you know, you're watching the movie and all of a sudden there's an elaborate sort of, you know, psychedelically colored dream sequence where someone uncredited, but I'm like 99.9% sure was Miley Cyrus. seducing a blonde wigged hippie headbanded Matt Damon.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, Damon's definitely in this movie. When you find out what he's doing in this movie, if you're like me, you'll be delighted. If you're a prude, you're going to be uncomfortable. But here's the thing. If you're a prude, you've already walked out of this movie before Matt Damon shows up.
All right.
A good long while before Matt Damon shows up. Again, it's so weird because like I dug this. Like I had a great time. Again, like you're going to get me in and out in less than an hour and a half. Like, let's go.
Sure.
Especially if you're going to do stuff that's interesting. Does it all work? No, it doesn't. But you've got a really talented cast who were very much game for anything. And so when you bring that energy, that sort of ambition to a project like this, like even the stuff that doesn't work, like it's easily forgiven because the stuff that does work really, really lands. And so, yeah, like this is, it's the sort of movie, like late February is the exact right time for a movie like this to come out. Like there's nothing else really going on. It's got a chance to maybe capture a little bit of attention, but I'll tell you this, Rich, this is the sort of movie that, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, like college kids are going to watch this movie in their dorm rooms. Like it's that kind of movie.
Nice,
like
nice.
It's going to have those sorts of legs, I think. Because again, like you've got talented performers really going for it, and it's weird enough to become that sort, to develop that sort of cult following, I think. But it's well made enough where it will actually stick around long enough to have that kind of second life, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, Drive Away Dolls, which by the way, the end credits will show you the alternative title to the film, which I'm not necessarily comfortable saying on the air. So we'll leave it at that.
All right.
But you'll when you get to the end, you'll see it, and it'll be like, oh yeah, no, that makes sense. Both why this is the alternate title, and you know why this is the alternate title. So
you've piqued my curiosity.
I think you'll have fun with it.
Excellent.
I mean, don't probably watch it by yourself.
Oh yeah. Abby wants no part of that, I'm sure.
I went solo as well, and again, like Sheridan's got wide-ranging tastes. I don't know that she would have had as good a time as I did.
You and I though have, well, similar tastes.
I feel like our tastes align, yeah, in the ways that matter for a movie like
all
this.
All the good ways. Yes. Yep.
Agreed. Right.
Thanks, Alan.
Hey, my pleasure.
See you next week.
Yes, sir.
When are the Oscars, by the way? March 10th?
March 10th.
Okay. So, yeah, next week, right? We'll be chatting them up a little bit.
Yeah. Do you want to plan on just doing a preview next week?
That's March 4th, right? Next Monday?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Let's do that.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Fabulous.
We'll preview it, and then, we'll do a post-game.
Break it all down the next week.
The next week.
Oh, I love it.
Sounds good to me.
Looking forward to it already. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
Take a break here. It's 5:34 on a Monday downtown. This is your 2024 insurance wake-up call, brought to you by FA Peabody Insurance. Don't forget to check if your insurance is ready for the